Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. We were discussing this in our pre-show meeting, which happens like literally right before we press record for about 3 minutes. And we agreed we must discuss the greatest upset of the week. And that will be Ohio State, Penn State. Yes, Penn State. You won a big game under James Franklin. We got fruit baskets. We got meat of the month club. We have celebratory processed meat spread. We'll send them all to you. Just congratulations for that. It's an astonishing thing. However, we do have to note one thing. Before we talk about how Ohio State lost its first game of the season and courteously showed the rest of Ohio how to share the spotlight, because that's what that was about. Not about Ohio State losing a game, but about clearing the way so everybody could focus on the Indians. Because remember, the Buckeyes lead first in the state of Ohio when it comes to sports. The Buckeye Indian Brown slash Cavs, whichever Trill Ballins character you want to become in following Ohio athletics. The point is, Jason Kirk, college football editor, joining us as always from Kennesaw, Georgia. What's the point we want to get to first?
Leonard Fournette killed a man on Saturday on live television. The LSU junior running back received a pass and was running up the left sideline when he engaged into contact with a freshman Ole Miss defensive back. Poor freshman who just didn't know what he was getting into. And the man ended up ass over tea kettle, his face in the ground, halfway into the upside down, looking like a fucking tombstone. Leonard Fournette just turned that poor boy into gravy. And it's a shame. Someone needs to do something about it. And they're just going to let him do it again next week. That's all. I'm just so worried for these young men out there.
This was the worst single Ole Miss defender moment since Trent Richardson shook Sanquez Golson twice in the same play.
Yep. So by that logic, poor
Deontay Anderson, 2011.
Yes. In two or three years, he will have his revenge against LSU and have a game-sealing interception. So just patience, young man.
Yeah. Ryan Nanny joining us. Did you see the Fournetting, the Fournettiture?
I mean, I tried not to because I'm trying to keep my soul clean, but it's, you cannot watch that. You have to sort of confront it and I'm not going to hide from the evil in this world. I refuse. And what Leonard Fournette did to that man, oh boy. Pure evil.
Yeah. This was, I thought I was over videos being recut to Jim Ross announcing mankind falling off of the cage. I'm not. And this was proof because our very own SB Nation social staff remixed it to that. And it worked. It worked. And I got excited.
Ole Miss has played 7 games now. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're 3-4.
Yeah, which we'll get to that mm-hmm. separately. In the 8th game, if they give up 70 yards on the ground, they will have given up more rushing yards in 2016 than they did in all of 2015, including the bowl game. I am hard-pressed to think of one specific part of a team that has gone so completely bad from one year to the other. With the exception of maybe Christian McCaffrey probably falls into that category too.
I would actually before this say maybe Leonard Fournette. I guess he's okay.
Well, he got to play Ole Miss, so all is well. That'll just, you know, when your cylinders aren't firing and whatnot, you know, you just mash the gas and let the engine work the thing out. You know, you ever have one of those car moments where you're just like, I don't know, fucking floor it, see if the car figures it out. Well, the car figured it out.
Are you guys excited for the Egg Bowl to quite possibly be the determining factor of which Mississippi school goes to a bowl game and which one doesn't?
I can't wait. My God.
There's nothing I want more.
The 2-5-win teams scratching for that 6-win.
Didn't this happen a couple years ago? Was this not when the Dr. Bo Fumble Bowl? Wasn't that bowl eligibility on the line?
Am I misremembering? I don't know.
Spiritually, it was, but I'm sure.
I would have to go back and look. I do know this, that in this game, we don't normally give out player awards here on the full cast, but I have a player of the week, and it's Deontay Anderson. For
he just, whew.
He sold that like a stunner, man.
Is that like is this like a purple heart kind of thing?
I am. I'm so proud of him because he got up and he played. he was leveled. He was inverted for a moment. He rolled back like he was performing some sort of collision yoga pose. And then you know what he did? He kept playing, man. They were getting their ass kicked and he stood up. We don't talk enough about players who get rocked in the teeth and then show up the next play. That's what he did.
He didn't like drop out of school. He didn't leave the state of Mississippi. Like, yeah, he sold that shit like The Rock taking a Stone Cold Stunner. Nobody can take a stunner like The Rock. The Rock will be like levitating over the over the rope. That was the visual. And I think you're right. This man deserves an award for his bravery out there.
So Ole Miss, don't think of it as a disappointing total collapse of a season. Just, you know, the WWE writers, this just wasn't your year with them. That's fine. You're going to get the belt.
Well,
maybe a belt.
Yeah, the SmackDown Hardcore belt.
Yeah, you know, Bama has the turnover belt. Ole Miss this game had the turnover. He got the turnover belt because he was literally turned over.
Ole Miss has the overturned belt.
Yeah, yeah. Also, can I just give this to Deontay Anderson? Not a banger, man. It's a DB. It's back there. And you know what a lot of DBs do when they're confronted with contact? They do what I do. They fly to the sideline. Just whoop. I'm sorry. That's what some safeties would do. And that's not what Deontay Anderson did.
I think if I'm in Deontay's shoes, I see Fournette coming at me. I'm just like, oh, shit, I didn't see him. I thought,
yeah,
oh,
you
damn
see
it.
Me run.
I was going the other way.
Yeah, we had another thing in this LSU Ole Miss game. We had a guy take out two blockers at once, and oh good Lord, it was violent. it was absolutely astonishing. So in other words, we were going to discuss the most important game of the week, and we ended up discussing what we actually felt like it was the most important game of the week, which was LSU. Just,
I mean, don't sign me up to that. I'm not going to say it's the most important. No,
this will define the season, right?
Yeah. It was. Okay. Cool.
Spiritually, I will say there's two really good things for your football team: playing Ole Miss, having Ed Orgeron as interim coach.
Good.
When you can get those two things at once, you're making vines.
Yeah. No, you got put several people, multiple pieces of social content were created in this game. That's an indicator. We should go back and look when the season's done and find which games generated the most vines and which team had the most vines generated on them. See, new award. It's the vines.
Yeah. That's fucking brilliant.
I do hope that after this game, Ed Orgeron quoted the entirety of the parable of the prodigal son to Hugh Freeze and the Ole Miss fans, but all in Ed Orgeron voice. Oh, and they did slay the fatted calf. Ho, ho, ho. Rub it down in despise.
And Hugh Freeze can't walk away from that. Like, what, brother Hugh? Like, he's going to walk away from a Bible story?
He'll be so.
He's just got to stand there and listen to it.
He'll be so steamed about it, too. He'll be so mad. He'll be like, I can't walk away. Ed knows it. Ed's like, oh, I know.
I got him, bro.
Plan that.
Why didn't I think of this?
Fat calf couldn't wrap up a tackle leader.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that they'll do that, and then the next, like, in the Egg Bowl, Hugh Freeze will try to pull it on Dan Mullen. He'll be like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. Bye.
This shit? I never heard this before that's in my it. Life.
Yeah. I enjoy how your Dan Mullen speaks like a 1940s mole.
Well, he's right. from Vermont or whatever. So it's whatever, one of those fucking states. So it's all that same accent.
One of those John Irving states.
One of those, I don't know, that it snows all the time or something.
Yeah.
Yes, one of those Volvo states. He's definitely from a Volvo state. The upset of the week, the game, the most important actual game, now that we are done talking about how Leonard Fournette absolutely baptized a man on the field of play. That would be Ohio State, Penn State. Ohio State coming into this game undefeated. Trick, funny thing, they're not undefeated now.
Voila.
They're now 6-1 because in the most lopsided score, box score, by quarter examination of the game. If you look, Penn State, this would have been 21-7 were it not for the fourth quarter, because Penn State rolls off 17 straight unanswered in the fourth quarter, including maybe my favorite way for a team that is probably on paper the inferior team to win a game. That would be blocking a field goal.
Gets them every time, man.
Probably on paper is such a kind word for the team that went 8 for 23 passing and ran for less than 3.5 yards a carry, winning the game. Like on tablets, on spreadsheets, on all forms of media, Penn State was not as good of a team as Ohio State. It just didn't fucking matter because Penn State did like three better things than Ohio State did, and they did them at the right time. And sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah,
this continues the streak of when Ohio State loses a game, it does so in such bullshit fashion that Ohio State fans look extremely ungracious for not saying they were the better team that day. Like, they have to bring up all the very, you know, valid points, like, oh, against Michigan State, we just decided to not, you know, like, use our best player, which kind of happened again. Like, Curtis Samuel had 2 carries in this game for an average. 5.5 yards.
10 touches total, but that's not enough, man.
Yeah, I mean, so that's happened where the winning team is like, no one really knows how they won, and Ohio State fans, when they try to explain it, they just sound like sore losers, which everyone can enjoy, at least.
I would like to point that out, too. Samuel had 2 carries. 2. They were for 71 yards. So, to be fair, maybe Urban Meyer and Ed Werner just sensed, well, that's as many yards as we'll get out of him. Anything else is just bringing down his yards per carry average.
I mean, one of those of the two for 71, one was for 74, so the other one was for a loss. So really, you're saying he's a coin flip of either he's going to run for a loss or he's going to run for a 70-plus yard touchdown. And I think
I'll take that.
That's risky, man.
Only averaging 8.2 yards per rush on the year and 12.7 through the air. That's, I don't know, probably only give him the ball like once, I think.
Yeah, I would like you, I would enjoy, by the way, finding one thing that Penn State did better. Because on the stat sheet, it's not there. I watched this game, and it looked like this, too. You're going, this doesn't add up. Nothing about this adds up. They
got after JT Barrett like a motherfucker. There was 6 sacks. And it felt like just infinite hurries. It felt like JT Barrett was, it literally felt like every play he was moving around. And he's good at moving around, but that will hurt you at some point. And
yeah, they had 11 tackles for loss in this game, which that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, on offense, Penn State didn't do a goddamn thing. But on defense, they looked awesome. And, you know, Ohio State fans have been saying our offensive efficiency has been declining for weeks. Well, okay, you're not playing Bowling Green anymore. And Wisconsin and Penn State have good defenses. So, you know, good defense on the road. Yeah. You know, you didn't play a great game, but shouldn't expect too much more than this.
Yep, and then you get the lottery ticket. It worked. It cashed in. Congratulations. All those people who told you that relying on blocked field goals to win a game, they're wrong. Now you're sitting on the full luxury of taking the stipend and getting the loss all at once. That would be Penn State now at 5-2, 3-1 in conference. Same as Ohio State, mind you. Despite, as we said, playing a game where offensively, largely butt. If there were butt rankings for the Big Ten, and I really encourage you to follow Rubber Chickens on Twitter, because does a fine job every week doing the SEC butt rankings, describing how much butt and what type of butt each team is. This week, Penn State's, I don't know, some like prime butt, because they kind of look like butt, but here we are at 24-21.
Okay, but see what I did.
Yeah, exactly.
Flip side, you know, I get that we're all like, haha, Ohio State. Here's a little fact for you. For all you haters out there, how many Urban Meyer teams have finished a season with one loss? The answer is 5. Spencer, how many of those teams won the damn national championship?
2.
The answer is 3. God, you're dumb.
3?
3, yeah. Do you remember how many national championships he's won?
You rooted for 2 of them.
I rooted for two of them. I just forgot that. Yeah, I forgot that they actually lost a game that year.
The Virginia Tech game, which was very similar to this game in some respects. How many?
By the way, let's just go back and let me say, I still don't believe that Virginia Tech beat them that game. So
they did. JT Barrett was in that game as well. JT Barrett also just got just his offensive line could not protect him when they needed to.
I think Spencer is arguing that facts don't matter and that if we choose to contest the results of that game and do not accept the outcome, we can just say that
I'm saying 60% of the time when Ohio State loses one game, only one, they win the national championship. When an Urban Meyer team does. But what happens, Spencer? Urban Meyer's had two teams that he's coached to undefeated seasons. How many national championships have those teams won?
Oh, I think I can get this one. Zero.
Yeah. That's right.
Go Utes.
That's right. So if anything, this is a good thing if you're an Ohio State fan. You don't want to go undefeated because then somehow your athletic director prevents you from playing in the national championship.
This is my grand point that every Alabama fan would acknowledge, correct? That eventually this Alabama team, you don't want to get through the regular season undefeated. You don't. You need the artificial motivation of a meaningless loss to spur you to greatness, right? That's what has to happen here. For instance, that didn't happen. Segue against Texas A&M. Yeah, you know, they put up a pretty bold fight and you still got beaten badly.
Yeah, and it was very close at halftime, and A&M managed a lead for like 3 minutes in the second half.
It was an amazing 3 minutes.
It was a precious 3 minutes when everyone just sort of perked up and said, I'm not ready to believe, but I'm considering believing. But I mean, if you look back at the first half, the only reason it was close was what? Bama missed a field goal. Okay, Bama always misses field goals, but still, Bama missed a field goal and was just kind of sputtering in the red zone.
It was held to field goals on two others, so...
Yeah, and, you know, man, the game could have been put away at halftime, but, whew.
Yeah, you got it. This was another game where maybe even not as close as the score would suggest, because A&M didn't have 300 yards offense, man. They got a little bit lucky. They got some field position. They mounted, I think, one prolonged drive, if I remember correctly. Kept Trevor Knight hemmed in most of the time. Ford never really got off at running back, and defensively, they couldn't block the Alabama run game. Mind you, that's the Alabama run game, which is basically the old Auburn run game, except run just as well, and with probably better players, if we're being totally honest. When you're starting quarterback and throw two interceptions and it doesn't matter, that's where we're at with Alabama, right? When Jonathan Allen... My brain just sort of like flipped inside my skull remembering this. When Jonathan Allen can beat his defender and then Superman dive over a running back on the block to sack Trevor Knight, I'll include this. Here, that'll be the thing we include. We'll include this clip because I just want everyone on the planet to understand that Jonathan Allen is not messing around. Not at all. No, nor is anyone on this defense, because they all seem, you know, that thing where Ed Reed, they used to, like, if you've watched Bill Belichick of Football Life, there's this great scene. Ed Reed is on film. Bill Belichick's watching him in his office, and he's sitting there, and you hear Bill Belichick go, look at this motherfucker, like out of the side of his corner of his mouth, because he's watching him, and Ed Reed walks in the office. He's watching him, and then they go to the next clip, and it's them on the field before the game, and Belichick walks up, and he's like, God, I hate you. I can't, because he can't put film on them, because they all know where the ball's going. Even if they're not in the position you think they should be in, they're going to get the ball. That's how good this defense is. Like, I know this isn't the Anaconda defenses that they put together. I know you can get some long plays on them. I know this doesn't look like, you know, 2011, but this defense and the way that they anticipate ball movement and pick balls out of the air and force fumbles and disrupt stuff, they're way more fun to watch. I love watching this team. I hate myself for saying that, but this is a different team, and it's a different kind of football.
You finally crossed over. All these years of Nick Saban evolving, they finally succeeded in winning over Spencer Hall. My favorite stat from this team at this point is that Jonathan Allen has two touchdowns. Christian McCaffrey has three rushing touchdowns on the year. So could be a close battle for the Heisman race.
Really, I mean, let's see. Eddie Jackson, Bama defensive back, done for the year. That's bad. Other than that, I think we can agree
that that's bad.
That's very, very bad. And that, you know, that might be like the only real concern, you know, even though everyone else on the defense is good and all that. But man, we are rapidly running out of chances for this team to lose.
Well, this is yet another segue. If we want to actually look at who they could theoretically lose to, there's only one team on their schedule who looks like they're capable of putting a biblical beatdown on another team. And I mean biblical because we're talking about the family and we're talking about Jesus' original football team. We're talking about that most blessed of tribes. That's correct. The Auburn Tigers.
Oh, no, no other cheeks were turned here, sir. This is purely Old Testament.
Not one in this game. Ryan, did you watch this game?
No, no. This is why? Why would I watch this game?
Spencer, did you?
I watched, I think, about half of it. And every time I turned it on, Arkansas was down by more and more points. It was every time I turned it on, it was in case, like, you know, most blowouts, you can turn to it and they'll hit a kind of stasis, right? Like, oh, they're up by 34. They'll just kind of park it. Nope. Got 14 points in third, 14 in the fourth. Every time I turned it on, Brett Bielema was at the blackjack table and deeper in debt, right? He's just, I'll buy back in. Okay.
Hit me.
Throwing 15s at you all day long.
Sir, I haven't even dealt you a hand yet. Just hit me.
I kindly request you hit me.
And boy, did. Yeah, and Auburn was... did. The Auburn run game just hit you and hit you and hit you and hit you and hit you just to the tune of 543 yards on 57 attempts.
Yeah, it was. They weren't throwing down a 10 every time, but they're throwing down 9.5 yards.
If I'm counting this correctly, there are 5 different players on Auburn who in this game averaged 7 yards a carry. That's fucking dumb.
Yeah, you want to hear, this is my favorite. It's cheap stats, but let's have them, okay? Cameron Petway as long was 27. I'm going to give you the long runs of everyone else not named John Franklin III, okay? Here are the long runs in a total of 543 rushing yards. 78, 51, 31, and 41. Those are the long runs that Arkansas allowed. There is no way that Arkansas's defensive coordinator makes it to next year. None.
No.
Absolutely not.
They just and Auburn still just could not be less interested in passing the ball. Threw the ball 12 times in this game. Completed 7 passes. Just didn't care.
57 carries.
I do think that is the if you are looking for the most glaring way in which the Iron Bowl is actually not going to be close, it's that. I don't think you can be entirely one-sided and just do it on the ground and beat Alabama. Hello, LSU. It doesn't feel like a good recipe for success because at some point you are going to have to show a little balance or do something unexpected or take a shot downfield. And I am a little worried that Auburn is doing it has kind of let that muscle atrophy. But for the meantime, you know, hey, this is a hell of a lot better than the season started for Auburn. So I am mad at you.
Yeah, I would. This is also the point where I think Sean White takes the field at quarterback against Alabama, and Alabama's defenders just look up and they're like, nah.
No.
Nah.
No,
nah.
Next. No.
Not that dude.
Disagree. Go.
No, you disagree. or you agree that they're going to walk out and just be like, not that dude.
Yeah, they just take one look and they say,
mute and block.
report this dude for spam.
I'm reporting this dude for abuse that I'm about to put on him.
Kindly ask White Sean to reconsider.
Exactly. Go get your other man, the other quarterback. That would be, I think, like a number of really terrifying things you could do as a defensive player. I'm on record as saying that the thing that would break me and get me off the football field forever as an athlete would be if somebody absolutely hammered me and did the entire Geico line to my face. The, ooh, baby, nothing's faster and more like efficient than Geico or whatever it is. If you did that whole line, I would completely lose my mind and just walk off. I'd be broken. The other thing would be if somebody did that, if a linebacker just walked up to the line of scrimmage to blitz through the A gap, looked up at me and was like, nah, not you.
That's all it would take?
If they were Alabama and I was Sean White, well, yeah.
No, I understand. Just, all right, that's fine. Yeah, I'd call
timeout. I'd be like, no, it's not me doing that.
I don't like our play. They had us, man, they had us red. Okay, well, what do you want to do?
I didn't like the look out there. We lined up as not Alabama, and they lined up as Alabama. And I feel like that was, I feel like we need to switch up the play call, maybe. See if we can get them to line up as Mississippi State.
I didn't like being behind the center. Oh, you want to be in the shotgun? Wow, that's still behind center. You see what I'm saying?
Maybe back up even more. Why don't we line me up in punt formation?
How about quick kick. I'll do that.
Yeah, Ryan Stewart, a former like radio host here in Atlanta with the Two Lives Two, said he lined up from Alonzo Spellman once on a special teams play, and he had to catch catching the edge, and Ryan Stewart looked up and Alonzo Spellman was in tears and like gibbering incoherently with rage, and he called timeout, walked over to Bobby Ross and was like,
no, we're not doing this.
Thank you.
Nah.
We're just and Bobby Ross is like, what? And he's like, no, not me.
Intuition is not worth it.
On the flip side of the rushing ledger, Arkansas ran the ball 31 times and they didn't even get 1 yard per carry.
Whew.
Ultimately, it probably doesn't tilt Arkansas's season one way or the other. They already had two losses in the division, so they were effectively out of that race, and they can still put together a decent season in a somewhat rebuilding year, but man, this was a pasting.
Yeah, they still get to play Mizzou, so they still get to go to a bowl.
Oh God! Can we? All right, let's get that. Let's get that out of the way real quick. Spencer, do you know who Missouri lost to this week?
Well, I do, because back in my NCAA playing days, the only team I would be for a real long time was the Middle Tennessee State Blue Raiders. We went through a lot, won 5 or 6 national titles. It was a special moment. So the bond I have with imaginary Middle Tennessee State, it's unbreakable. The one I have with real Middle Tennessee State, it's faint. It's usually where in high school we'd go to buy weed. That's where you could do it. It was Middle Tennessee State and Murfreesboro. Can I remind you, before we begin discussing this, the offensive coordinator at Middle Tennessee State. Who is that?
It's Tony Franklin.
Oh,
it's Tony
boy.
Franklin. That's
oh,
correct.
God.
Where did Tony Franklin come from to coach voluntarily in Murfreesboro?
He left Cal.
That's right.
Which is still in the Power 5.
Now, can I also remind you, too, he was pretty happy at Cal. He would, like, he grew his hair out. He lived in a loft. You know, I suspect that between you and I, Tony was probably living the life out there, man. I don't think, you know, might have had a card. Might have just been chilling. Whatever. Spiritually, I think he explored some things when he went there.
Medicinal offense.
You really, remember, only take a quarter of the Tony Franklin offense at a time.
Really, if ever there was an argument for how disheveled Cal is, it's Tony Franklin leaving Berkeley for Tennessee.
Yeah.
The most Berkeley of all football coaches leaving for the middle of for a part of Tennessee where there is a McDonald's, and that is the only thing I've ever remembered about driving through it.
They got a Carrabba's. I'm pretty sure they got a Carrabba's, and they got the Ulta there too by the mall. If you go through the lot, it's bland, is what we're saying. So Tony Franklin's officially the freakiest person in Middle Tennessee State, but you know what? It paid off.
They fucked up homecoming. They fucked up Missouri's homecoming.
On homecoming, man, Mizzou lost at homecoming to Middle Tennessee State. And let me say, not an entirely, like, dismal loss, because Middle Tennessee State, they're pretty good. I don't think that an SEC East team should ever lose to them necessarily. But here we are. It happened. They gave up 584 yards and 6 TDs to Middle Tennessee State. So in case you wonder whether the SEC East has experienced that long-awaited renaissance with the influx of new coaching talent, brave new thought, and additional funding and improved facilities, nope, not there. We're not even close to it. It's not happening.
Listen, if you're going to lose to a Conference USA East team, you lost to the best of all of them. So take solace in that, Mizzou.
That's comforting. Boy, and you know, it just breaks my heart because this really puts a damper on Georgia's signature win so far.
Oh, God.
I love you so much sometimes, Ryan.
Georgia also suffered a transitive loss to Tennessee State. Vandy was in a real, real brawl with Tennessee
State. I love that every Georgia fan, you are the snake that doesn't bite until the last possible second, mm-hmm, yeah, right? Like, oh, this snake isn't too bad. Oh, God! He found a way to get us. Always. Every single time you will find a way to get back to how dumb Georgia was for hiring Kirby Smart.
Not sorry.
Not that... Yeah, no, not sorry. No. The other game that I wanted to get to was a less important game by position and more important in terms of sassiness, spite, a little bit of personal tiff between two coaches, very large personalities and outsized styles. That would be Todd Graham and Mike Leach. Do you want to narrate this particular shit show for us, Jason?
So, sometime around last year, Mike Leach became convinced that Arizona State was stealing signals. And while everyone agrees that all coaches steal signals and it's just a part of football, he has intimated that it went beyond what is usually allowed and has involved technology. He's used the word technology. He's described it as being like the Enigma code, which is extremely Mike Leach. You know, he's referencing historical events. While he calls you a cheater and using technology, that's what gets you, you know, that's like Patriots grade cheating. That's Bill Belichick stuff. Our man, Bill Belichick, we love him. So he's saying Arizona State is going well beyond just gamesmanship and is actually breaking rules. Todd Graham is, of course, a man of, excuse me, a man of impeccable honor. Sorry.
Something in your throat.
I got through that one. A man of the highest personal merit and personal regard that was very, very, very offended by this. And the Pac-12 fined Mike Leach. So then after the game, after Washington State's win, cameras recorded Todd Graham approaching Leach for the handshake. So mumbles, chicken shit, mumbles, bullshit, mumbles, how about some respect? Something like that. Leach looks at him like he's a space alien and then walks off like he has no interest in looking at space aliens, goes to the post-game presser where he's asked not even stuff about, like, do you still think Arizona State cheats? Just stuff like, how did you, you know, plan for Arizona State's defense? And he drops some Marshawn Lynch wisdom like, well, I'd prefer not to comment in any way that would get me reprimanded by the Pac-12. And then just keeps repeating that over and over again. So all in all, just peak Mike Leach for a solid 2-year campaign against a conference foe. Man, I don't even know where to begin.
Not even a division foe. Not even a foe that you necessarily have meaningful recent history. It just,
compared to Pullman, the other side of Earth.
It's fucking bizarre. But that's why you hired Mike Leach. You didn't hire him because you wanted to have normal relationships with other people.
Yeah, and I mean, they won.
It's sort of like getting a python. It's not a move you make because you're like, oh, this will really, you know, make me beloved by the community and show people that I'm responsible and easy to talk to and approachable. You just do it because you want to be fucking weird, and that's fine because, you know, if there are places and times in life, and Pullman is probably one of them, where it's better to just buy a python than try to be normal.
I am stunned by the use of chicken shit.
Oh, it's chicken shit. That's, is one of my favorite dad
that's
cusses.
That's Bobby Cox level cussing right there.
Yeah.
It is chicken shit is a great dad cuss. It's the kind of thing where, like, when the cable company doesn't show up and they're 4 hours late, he's like, that chicken shit Time Warner representative promised me they'd be here between 2 and 6, but his ass lied.
I don't feel like it's a profanity that Todd Graham has the rank for. I feel like he needs to class up before he can use chicken shit properly. I just don't feel like he has the gravitas to use it.
So you're downgrading him to horse crap? Bull
yeah,
crap.
Oh, damn. Yeah. Yeah, he's a bull crap guy.
Okay.
All the way down to a bull crap. Wow. I was going to say he could go horse shit at least. Right? Or is horse shit, is that even more advanced?
Horse shit's a little more aggressive than chicken shit.
Wow, yeah, okay.
You got to be super comfortable with that. And, you know, there's a lot of coaches who are masters at profanity. I think this is a misstep by Todd Graham. It's really not fitting the talent he has on hand to his system of profanity. So chicken shit's not really, it's not anything that Leach is going to hear either, because he knows it. Leach is like, yeah, you can't carry this off. It's not an act that you can pull, right? That, and also, I don't know if you noticed Leach's expression walking off, and I don't want to entirely take either gentleman's side here. Taking Mike
you
Leach's
fucking
side.
Liar. You fucking liar.
No, I really don't. I really don't. Yeah, hear me out on this.
But I think Spencer's saying he doesn't want to take a side. That doesn't,
oh, yeah. I mean, my worst self, i.e. me, would. But in trying to be reasonable, you really don't want to necessarily just blanket agree with Mike Leach on things. You don't.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, yeah.
In a lot of ways, on a lot of issues, you don't want to agree with Leach. Let's talk. For instance, let's ask Mike one time his opinion on injuries and on head trauma. No one does that because he lives in Pullman. But man, if you do, you'll get 8 to 12 minutes of tape that might scorch his entire career.
See,
so
I think Mike Leach was making that face because Todd Graham said chicken shit, and he immediately was like, "Well, really, what chickens excrete is sort of a mixture of urine and urea, and it comes out of a cloaca." So
see,
I don't.
It's more of an oil slick. See, it's wait, not a
sort of a paste. It's got the viscosity of sort of like hot mayonnaise. I would say it's not
well,
really shit
at
all.
Short haired fella coming up to me talking about how chickens shit, and then I was about to have a dialogue with him, and the next thing you know, he's talking about how bulls shit. So I just got out of there because the guy couldn't make up his mind which kind of shit he wanted to talk about.
I mean, I'm from Cody, you know, in Wyoming, and, you know, we grow up around all that stuff.
Are Todd Graham and Butch Jones brothers?
They might as well be. They have the same haircut. You know, Todd Graham's got to be the older brother who really put Butch through some shit, right?
And follow-up question, are they both Buzz from Home Alone?
Are they both the coach from Beavis and Butthead? That's the other thing I thought. Are they Roshambo you? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're the older brother from Weird Science. They're Chet. Yeah. They're Chet.
We've expended so many tired cultural references in one single thing. Yeah.
Tired cultural references. I mean, you're talking about Tennessee football.
Oh, God. Oh, they didn't even play this week.
Ooh. Well, that's their own. I mean, shit. Maybe they ought to have, huh?
Yeah. I don't know. You want to stay relevant? The other thing, Mike Leach's face on this, it's the best curve. It's such a good diss because he hears it and then just goes, yeah, I don't even want to deal with that, and just keeps walking. There's no change of expression, just a mask. Like, oh, yeah, sure. How's that L? I got another one for you. Here, look, hold your hand like this. It's an L. What you got?
Listen,
I just gave you.
Jason, I understand that Tennessee didn't play this week, even though you were very rude, but there is a UT that did.
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. We don't have to talk about it. We just have to say this. Kansas State 24, Texas 21.
Oh, let's talk about Toledo. That's a UT, right?
If you did not watch Texas K-State, and really, unless you're a depraved individual, why would you?
Let me give you a few things. I watched this game.
Yeah, you did. You know why you watch it? Because you like watching Bill Snyder play P-Knuckle. You like watching Bill Snyder do what Bill Snyder does, which is hold the ball for almost 40 minutes, turn a tight end into a laser accurate quarterback capable of dominating a game single-handedly. Mind you, this would have been a bigger blowout, but K-State turned the ball over 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they kept Texas great. In it.
Yeah, that's
which in the end just felt cruel and unnecessary.
Yeah. And in case you think like Bill Snyder's this nice man, I will always argue Bill Snyder, there ain't a nice bone in his body. You know why he writes notes? To taunt. I'm so polite. Here you go. Like, after the game, he went up to Charlie and goes, you know what? You're going to be fine. You're going to work this out. I think you're the man for Texas. That's a real classy gesture. Do you know what it was? It's the kiss of death. It's Bill Snyder just, mwah, Bye.
Yeah, this is also like how historical rivals would, you know, would correspond like this. It feels like something Civil War generals would do, just sort of write a cordial letter to one another and then say, sorry about the gangrene.
Yeah, so Bill Snyder's contemporaries.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Exactly. He learned it from PGT Beauregard. Actually, that'd be the wrong side. He beat PGT Beauregard, and then you know what he did? He said, I think you're the right man for the Confederate Army.
Oh my God.
You're doing a great job.
You're keep it up.
The long list of people that Bill Snyder's buried, we'll just write it one day and you will just reel at how many people. Like, why wouldn't you be that way if you're Bill Snyder? I have seen what you are. Everything that has already been will be again. And you know who's still going to be coaching K-State at the end of it? Me.
God. Just. Ugh.
Yeah.
Charlie's in trouble. It was good. This had, in the first half there was a 16-play drive, I believe, that took up about 7 minutes of game time. And I really hope we can, this is what I think Bill Snyder's doing. He refuses to die or quit coaching until he can coach the perfect drive, which is a drive that starts at the one and every play gains exactly 3.34 yards. And he just keeps doing that all the way down the field until they get a touchdown.
If he gained
2.6, then that would be...
Oh, you're saying he's going for fourth down over and over again.
Yeah, he's going for every fourth down, right. Even at his own seven.
See, that feels a little wild for Bill. Like, I think at some point he thinks that's showy, but
maybe every third down is a penalty then.
Okay, that's fine. This is more of like a minimalism thing. Honestly, if Bill Snyder could get the ball up three in the, let's say, the start of the third quarter and just hold on to it, gain a first down, lose all that yardage due to a penalty, gain the first down back, lose the yardage again, and just sort of never move outside of a 20-yard area, I think he'd be perfectly happy. Just run out the whole 30 minutes of game clock.
Let me give you the ultimate Snyder scenario, which is what happened in this game. Score quickly on a touchdown, force a punt, then the next touchdown drive, just to let you know what you're in for. 16 plays, 80 yards, 7:23 off the clock. Then, four punts, happily exchanged. Four of them, just dump, 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 dump. And then a K-State touchdown.
I feel like on these long K-State drives, he should just be on the sideline, like, luxuriously playing bass guitar or something. Just, like, extended solos.
Just on a fretless bass. It has to be fretless, and he has to be playing some sort of, like, smooth jazz.
Welcome to college football's jam band.
My favorite part of this game was when K-State converted one of its, I think it was 2-for-2 on fourth down. And it has this formation that's like even more Stanford than Stanford, where there are seven across the line, quarterback jammed up tight, and then three big dudes right behind the quarterback, like right behind the quarterback. It is the most compact formation you could possibly have in all of football. And at the snap, the three big dudes almost just go straight up the quarterback's ass, and he'll gain a yard. There's no way around it. He'll either gain a yard or he'll be mashed into a diamond, one of the two.
Either way, you win. You get an asset or a first down. You can't trust currency. Guess what you can trust? Diamonds. Phil Snyder knows this. He survived the sack of Ithaca. The other game, I know we didn't really want to discuss Texas, but here we go. I want to discuss something happier, which is Lamar Jackson, because I enjoyed discussing Lamar Jackson. Most people, I don't think, gave this enough pub because it came on at noon. I guess that's when people go grocery shopping who don't watch college football.
Well, no, that's not why they didn't give it enough pub. It's because the game was over after 8 minutes.
Why would you say that? Do you think that, I don't know, 44-0 is a commanding halftime lead?
at which point did they pull Lamar Jackson off the field? Nope. Sure as hell didn't.
Well, how else is he going to get reps?
That's a really good point.
It actually is a good point with Lamar Jackson, because they get up so fast and with such fury that Lamar Jackson honestly probably doesn't know how to play a fourth quarter. He's played one versus Clemson, really. Everything else, it's been kind of dicey. NC State spent most of last week talking about how well-coached they were. Yeah, they're pretty well-coached. They don't have a Lamar Jackson. They also, by the way, don't know how to deal with Louisville's defense, and there's no crime in that. Most people don't. Louisville's defense looked great. Super disruptive, nasty. They were a handful. They were a problem. Like, this makes Clemson-Louisville look even weirder in retrospect, because we often don't think about how styles make fights. NC State had 9 on the day. That was with garbage time.
Which was most of the game, again.
If you're Clemson, do you just look up every single week at Louisville's score and think, like, whew, couldn't be me. Glad we don't have to play glad we don't have to play Louisville anymore this year. Got that out the way. Like, that's like, you know, all your bills are paid. That's that feeling, not having to play Louisville again at any point this season.
Dodged a bullet. That's what that is. They dodged a bullet by getting Louisville, I guess, when they did, how they did. And I don't know, under the certain correct phase of the moon that they did, because I don't think that's how that game would go again.
Can we talk about Iowa real quick? I'm sorry. I'm already doing this.
What? Iowa things do not happen real quick, unless we're talking about the field goal.
Yeah, we're talking about the field goal. Jason, since you're our designated narrator for all of these things, lay it out for the people.
So I believe it was about 4 minutes left. The score was... Iowa was down by 8.
8 points, yes.
8 points. 14-6, I believe. Had the ball around the 30 or so, and maybe a little further out, but a makeable field goal range. I believe it was a 4th and 5, and Iowa elected to kick the field goal and missed it, which gave Wisconsin the ball in decent field position. They drove down and kicked a field goal of their own, and that was pretty much that. And when asked about it after the game, why not just go for the touchdown? Because if you get the 6 and the 2, the game's tied up. Kirk Ferentz said, no, we needed 2 scores. You know, we were down by 8. We needed 2 scores. And he was asked again, like, basically, you know, 2-point conversions exist, right? And his reply was more or less, we felt it was the best decision at the time.
So like, I have two feelings here. First of all, People got really upset about this, and, you know, suggested that Kirk Ferentz doesn't know how to do math and that he's just this crusty old idiot. At this point, that's on you, man. If you ask Kirk Ferentz, hey, why did you do the unnecessarily conservative thing that had basically no chance of helping your team in the long run and just was cowardly and stupid? The answer is because I'm fucking Kirk Ferentz and I get paid to do that. I get paid very well.
What incentive has anyone ever given him
to not to be Kirk Ferentz?
But my wasn't that the whole story of last year, though? Like
that he was slightly
they're
different.
Getting bold. They're mixing it up. Like they're returning punts more aggressively. That's the most Iowa shit I've ever heard. Like, oh, Kirk's letting his hair down. We're returning punts a little less conservatively. But my
alternate theory is this: it's not that Kirk Ferentz can't do math. It's that he refuses to use a computer and that he's still using a rule book from before the 2-point rule was brought in, whenever the hell that was. And they keep emailing him updated rule books, and he's like, yeah, I got the old one. I'm good.
I got it. Nothing beats the originals. I got it on vinyl.
I think maybe he's hit the point where he no longer uses any new technologies, even if those technologies are just rewrites of rules. Like, do you think Kirk Ferentz DVRs anything?
He's never updated his operating system. Not a chance.
Didn't the Solid Verbal have him on and ask him about his favorite movie, and it was something from like 1970, like the last movie he's seen, and it was like
The Deer Hunter or something. Yeah.
Man, why would you have Kirk Ferentz on?
He's a nice man.
He's a nice man, but man, like what like look at that, like look at the way he coaches football. Look at his what are you going to get out of them? I need to go listen to this because the Solid Verbal are brilliant. I just want to see if they actually got something out of him. Like, I don't think this is a dude that you get on for color.
This is this game was terrible. This game was terrible. And Wisconsin, I give you very little credit for winning it. This was every Wisconsin Iowa game ever. And I hate watching them.
Yeah. This was everything that Wisconsin Iowa was supposed to be. Unwatchable.
Can you believe this? And Oklahoma, Texas Tech are the same sport.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. God. By the way, can I go back to Texas for just a second?
Oh man, damn it! I thought asshole.
I got it. No, this is a segue. Okay. Remember, what's their escape plan? Their escape plan is Tom Herman. How'd his weekend go?
Well, he lost by I think 3 scores to a team he talked shit about.
That's correct.
A team that still has a losing record.
But he didn't do it with Texas University of Texas players.
Okay. He just needs a resource bump.
Yeah, so he can lose by 3 scores.
With University of Texas players.
Talking shit about a better 3-4 opponent.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oklahoma, Texas Tech.
Oh, phew.
This was everything that I think you wanted it to be. The 66-59 final. No, that's not an overtime score. That's the final score. We'll keep playing this game, by the way. Pat Mahomes, 88 attempts. That's over 3 games, right? Nope, that's 1 game. I know that's a shocking number even for Air Raid. It's 1 shy, I believe, of Connor Halliday's record for most passes in a game.
Also again, in a loss, which is great.
We're dealing with here. through 5 TDs, had 734 yards. If you add up all of this, there's almost a mile of offense in this game. Because in addition to...
Between the two teams, yeah.
Yeah, between the two teams. And if you add all this up, by the way, Oklahoma established the bizarre achievement of having a 500-yard passer, a 200-yard rusher, and a 200-yard receiver, which has never... I don't believe that's ever been done.
It's been. I think Oklahoma people are saying it's never been done, which it sounds hard to do. Mahomes had the most yardage any college football player has ever recorded in any game. Set a Big 12 record for completions, breaking Cliff Kingsbury's record.
The Texas Tech yardage record, which was 662.
Shattered the Texas Tech. I mean, it set the Division I record for, tied the Division I record for passing. I mean, the score alone does not tell what happened in this game. The most Big 12 game of all time, and I'm pretty happy we got to witness it.
It's so bizarre how split down the middle it was too. Both teams finished with exactly 854 total yards. Granted, they got it in different ways, but the difference in time of possession, Texas Tech had slightly more at 30 minutes 53 seconds. Oklahoma 29 minutes 7 seconds. If you are Mike Stoops, what are you doing with your team this week?
He said there was a quote where he said, "We tried man, we tried zone, none of it worked." And I would tend to agree.
Yeah, longest scoring drive. Remember we were talking about glorious 7 and 8 minute scoring drives that K-State game. Longest scoring drive. Texas Tech had a 425er. That was it. A methodical. 425.
Holy shit.
425 is the longest drive in the whole game. It gets worse when you look at Oklahoma. Because Oklahoma was scoring in a minute 37, 44 seconds, okay? They did punt. There were a couple of punts in this game. That happened. And then the rest of them are 42 seconds. A minute 26. A minute. Oklahoma scored faster than Texas Tech.
Not great.
Incredible. And for any Big Ten fans who just heard us complain about Wisconsin, Iowa, and then praise this, I mean, just wait till Ohio State, Michigan, when we're openly begging for a 10-7 in hellish conditions. It's not just about points.
The Big Ten's got Michigan. Michigan is happy to put as many points on you as they conceivably
That's
can.
True. We love Michigan games.
Michigan will. We're up 34 points on Illinois. Don't care. Fake punt.
Big punt.
Yeah.
We're still up and we got a bad spot on 4th and 2. Don't care. Challenge. I don't know that Jim Harbaugh. I mean, it's already well established that Jim Harbaugh has no off switch, right?
Correct.
He is the robot at the beginning of RoboCop that they try to use the stop command on. He's like, nope, I got these guns for a reason and I'm lighting you up.
A drastic chill deficiency. Cannot conceive None. Of the idea of not competing, no matter what the score. I mean, keep in mind, this is the man who basically made his very first national impression by choosing to score more points on Pete Carroll, pissing off Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll, already a troll of a coach, got out-trolled by Jim Harbaugh, who just could not conceive of not scoring more points.
I think your best bet at this juncture is to prey on Jim Harbaugh's addiction to competition and sort of try to lure him into distracting things. Like
just, a side quest.
Just before the first quarter, before the game starts, send a grad assistant over to the Michigan sideline. Have him holding 2 gallons of milk and just hand one to Jim and say, I bet I can chug this faster than you, fuck.
You're on.
And then he's throwing up for the whole fourth quarter, calling for fake punts anyway.
No way he's throwing up, man. Jim's keeping that down. He's going to look awful. He's going to have like a hand on his butt, literally, to like hold it in. And he's yeah.
Jim Harbaugh just pooped a wheel of Monterey Jack.
And Michigan goes for it on fourth. Players are so inspired. They're like, dude, this is amazing. Run through a wall for that, man. I'd do this. I'd get a sleeper grad assistant to just put Pokemon Go on his phone. Oh, yeah. He's roaming the stadium during the game, right?
You, section 37, hold still.
Hold still. I got to get this war turtle.
You're in grave fucking danger. I don't know what I mean. Is there any game or competition or sport? Is there anything that you feel like you could safely compete against Jim Harbaugh in?
Like maybe a
You mean in win?
No, just walk away feeling like, okay, I never felt threatened for my life.
It would have to be like a computer game where you're playing, you know. It's not local internet.
Oh,
like you're not in the same building.
Right, right. I just want Jim Harbaugh to go on The Price is Right, because he'll rip that fucking wheel off its moorings.
he's also taken to wearing the not horn rims. I don't think that's the exact glasses. They're the same model of glasses worn by, in his own words, he wore them in honor of Woody Hayes, Malcolm X, and Michael Douglas. Now,
not Michael Douglas.
No, Michael Douglas. That's what I'm getting to. Not okay. Michael Douglas, but which Michael Douglas, Ryan?
Michael Douglas in Falling Fucking Down.
Deep End.
Which I'm pretty sure Feach is a movie about road rage that goes so far awry that it ends up with one man shooting a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
That man is Michael Douglas. If you think Jim Harbaugh wouldn't shoot a rocket launcher over a bad call, you are very wrong.
Woody Hayes, known rageaholic, who in addition to that also said of the My Lai massacre that, you know, they probably deserved it unless they were like under the age of 5. That's Woody Hayes. All right. And then Malcolm X, whose appearance in this list of people is so baffling to me. I'm just going to punt. I'm going to do the Big Ten thing, y'all.
And now we will talk about a different game. Hey, let's hats off to the UCLA defense. I think, you know, Mike Gundy talked about the other day how, you know, he made sort of a confusing comment about kids today on their phones and blah, blah, blah. And it's very easy to look at college students, people in this generation, and say, oh, they're selfish, they're self-centered. UCLA's went out of its way to make a retiree's day. And I think that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, the truly honoring our senior citizens. They really gave Joe Williams a senior citizen discount, is what it was.
That's right, early bird.
This young man who came out of retirement because Utah's running back depth chart had disappeared, and then set the school record because he got to play UCLA. That's pretty awesome. It's pretty sweet of you.
That, and remember how UCLA was going to be a run first, hard nose.
Oh, you mean they threw 70 passes even though Josh Rosen wasn't in the game? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's done. That's over.
So they're onto a new brand.
UCLA is now 1-4 in conference play. This is not a good team, and this is a team that I'll give them Oregon State at this point, just because even though Oregon State did beat Cal and has been better this year than they have in years past, this is a team that I don't feel great about getting to a bowl game. They still got to go on the road to Colorado in a couple weeks. They have the USC game as usual, and they finish up with a Cal team that is, you know, sometimes really good, sometimes not so good. But UCLA, all season long, they're just kind of shit.
UCLA, kind of shit. Disagree with us if you will. It's totally accurate. The other game that I would like to highlight before we go, Oregon Cal. I stayed up for this because I'm stupid. This game started at 10:30. This game ended on Eastern time at around 3:04. In case you wonder whether Cal just giving you more football, whether you want it or not, was the thing that happened. Yeah, that happened. Cal just gives. They give and give and give. You may not want to keep watching them, but they'll make you. Because by extending the game to unreasonable lengths and then taking it to OT, oh, Cal, just giving whether you want them to be or not. Oregon now falls to 0-4 in the Pac-12. A much more competitive Oregon team than they had been in weeks past. Mind you, this was against who? Cal. Yeah, you almost beat Cal. That's where Oregon is as a program.
Maryland beat Michigan State, and we were all just sort of like, yeah, I mean, that sounds right at this juncture. Nobody seemed particularly fazed or perturbed by it. Just sort of like, yeah, I mean, Michigan State, not a good team. Who do they get to play next? Oh, that's right. The number 2 Michigan Wolverines. That game is going to be not safe for television.
Grim. It's a grim, grim game. A few other things I'd like to note. I'm going to, in the top whatever this week, I'm going to rank UCF probably 3rd.
For purely salt reasons, I assume.
Yep. Yep, UCF. They're 4-3. You say, why would you put a 4-3 team in there? I'm going to answer that. We've been tracing the history of this rivalry. It's rather one-sided because only UConn believes it exists. Bob Diaco just picked a rival out of nowhere. He chose UCF. He put a rivalry clock because I guess when you start a football program as a new coach, you just need to put a rivalry clock against somebody to remind them of impending conflict. And I use that word because this was termed the civil conflict, with the conflict being the CT at the end for Connecticut. Yeah. UCF in Connecticut. UCF beats them in Connecticut 24-16. The rivalry trophy comes out, and UCF leaves the field without it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they forgot it.
No. They don't care. That was a choice.
They openly said they don't care. Last year at this game, UCF mascot was holding up the Regina George "Stop trying to make the civil conflict happen" sign. UConn literally did not even ask UCF if they wanted to have a rivalry. The UCF's, I think the first time anyone acknowledged it was Scott Frost. Someone asked him about it this year, and he sort of said, "Oh, you know, sure. Conference games, those are, yeah, we try to win those."
I think at this point, if you're Connecticut, just pick a new rivalry. Pick preferably somebody you've never even played, and just be like, "Yep, that Ohio State, they're our rival now." Ohio State or UConn is our greatest rivalry. We've never played on the field because they're too. That's how hate filled this clash would be.
We hate each other so much, like our boys are holding us back. Mm-hmm. Like if this fence wasn't here, boy, we'd be playing 12 times a year.
Yep, never played Texas A&M. There's a new rival. UConn A&M. Huskies Aggies. That's what, and the trophy is just a very fat dog.